the buzzer. McBird on its way. Oh my goodness.
They have to get it in. No timeouts. They do.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Welcome to World's Greatest Podcast. My man Dan Dokic and I, we're going to take you through Feast Week, the ACC Big Ten Challenge. We also, as I said, have a chance to sit down with Kansas coach Bill Self, coming off his NIT championship, what he learned about his team, what he needs to improve on moving forward, as Kansas always plays a very difficult schedule. Have Nova coming up, and then we kind of make a couple picks. Dan and I, we go through a couple of key games this weekend. The Big Ten opening up the season with Wisconsin, Iowa, Purdue, Michigan. So stick around. We got a great show. D Square.
Yo.
What a week of basketball we've had. Seriously. I mean, Feast Week was a 10-course meal, double helping of turkey. It was ridiculous. And then the dessert, the ACC Big Ten Challenge, was absolutely insane. But let's start with Feast Week. All right. Let's just start with, you know, Maui. And Maui was absolutely incredible. Kind of what was your takeaway from how good is Gonzaga? How good is Duke? How good is Auburn, who looked really, really good? What was your take on Feast Week?
I think Duke is really good. I know they lost, but, you know, last undefeated, 76. So everybody loses, right? I think Duke is really good, and I thought what they did to Indiana after Maui was really good. I think that Gonzaga is not only really good, but really veteran, really connected, really smart. And I personally, the two teams that I've watched that don't seem to have any holes right now are Michigan and Gonzaga. I just think that Gonzaga guards you. They're going to score it from a variety of areas. Hashimura is ridiculous. Auburn, I think, is going to be down the stretch for the SEC title. I still believe in Kentucky. I don't.
Ooh, you know, I like that.
I do.
You're rolling on the Cats. Not exactly a challenging schedule since Duke on purpose. Backloaded.
Yeah, and it's back. I was just going to say, yeah, backloaded. And I look, to me, you go to Maui, however you play, right? And then we forget about it in about a month. Like, but when you watch those teams, you say, you know what, San Diego State, Xavier, but the rest of them, you're sitting there going, these teams could all compete for a title. I look, if you beat, let me go this route with you, because you are the commissioner of storming the court. If you beat Auburn this year at home and you're, say, Mississippi, you storming the court?
Oh, yeah.
Right?
They were at champs last year.
Right.
I mean, that's a big win. That's a top 10 win.
Right. You know
I watched Maui first, obviously, and, you know, I agree with you on Gonzaga. Like, here's the thing. In the last two Final Fours, there were veteran teams in the Final Four. I mean, you look at North Carolina when they won their championship. You look at Villanova. You look at Villanova the year before. I mean, as good as Duke is, and we'll get to them in a second, it's hard to win a championship with kids. You need grown men. You need guys that are going to deal with adversity. You need guys that have shared experiences. The thing about Gonzaga that's interesting is the pieces they've added. Like Brandon Clark is a joke. That guy's like a pogo stick. And he's like Jonathan Williams II. I mean, he compliments Rui Hashimura, who is so skilled and so versatile. But the guy that put it all together, that was the big, you know, I guess, I don't know, big question mark. The big question, the Riddler. That's the Riddler for Batman. Yeah, the Riddler. He's the big question mark. Was Josh Perkins. That dude was good. I mean, he was like really, really good. I mean, so when he's playing well, is there a better front court in college basketball than Gonzaga has with Hashimura, with how about Felipe Petrusev, with Brandon Clark, when they get Killian Tilly back? They got to have the best front court in college basketball. So if Perkins plays well, this team is national championship good. Duke is Duke. I mean, I thought Duke, I'm sure you watched some of the Indiana game. I'm sure you were on the air or not. But, like, they learned from their past experience. First two plays of the game, where did Duke go? Right into the paint. Duke, instead of being soft as they were against Gonzaga in the first half defensively, they pressured the ball. They challenged every pass. They got out in transition. I just thought Duke learned from that experience. Now, they also fell back in the second half, human nature of being careless, and that's why Coach K. By the way, do you call that a coat toss? I thought it was more of a flip.
I'm used to Gene Cady and Bob Knight firing those things, and I learned from them two things. One, a face. Two, a fire. And neither, I didn't think there was any fire to those coats. I did
some on SportsCenter yesterday. Yeah. I did the art of the coat toss. Like that was a flip. I mean, now, like, it all depends on what you're wearing. Because, I mean, like, if you're wearing the good stuff, I'm getting off on a tangent here, you don't really fire that thing down. But if you're wearing one that's a year or two old and it's kind of sweaty from the game anyway, it's going to the cleaners, then you just go with it. That was a flip. And then he gave it, the game was going like, yeah, what does that mean? That was just my commentary on that. But
I agree. Anyway,
Maui was interesting. I agree with you on Auburn. I think Auburn's really good. And they're going to get better. They're going to get D'Angelo Purifoy back. But I think Macklemore changes their team. And I was worried about them losing to Sean Murray. But Samir Dowdy, he's really good. I mean, that guy plays hard. So that was interesting. Now, you know, you were in the Bahamas, by the way. Not exactly a connection with mammals. I was a little disappointed.
Yeah, Jimmy took that over.
He was the king of mammals.
Yes, he was.
I mean, Sebastian and Jimmy, close personal friends.
Apparently.
Yeah, I mean, obviously. I mean, Sebastian, very coachable. I'm not sure Jimmy is. What was your takeaway from the Bahamas?
You know what my takeaway was? I'm watching Virginia, and Virginia is dismantling Wisconsin, who's good. Wisconsin's good, not great, good. And I'm thinking to myself, Virginia is going to have so many teams this year say, man, we should have beat them. Man, we're better than them. Man, we got more talent than them. I swear, Seth, it's like I'm watching Duke, I'm watching Gonzaga, I'm watching Auburn, I'm watching Kansas, and I'm thinking, man, the disparity in talent between those teams and Virginia is so great. Now, that's not a slight to Virginia. People took it as a slight to Virginia, but it's not. It's so great, the physical athletic ability. You know, really, other than the point guard's really quick.
Kia Clark.
Yeah. The two guys, Jerome and Guy, are faster than, you know, off screens than maybe anybody. So that's part of being an athlete. Hunter's a really good athlete. Salt's not, but he's strong. But the difference is, honest to God, the difference is athletically, it's crazy. Crazy.
But you know what? They're experienced. They're connected offensively and defensively. They own the tempo. That guy, Kihei Clark, is the ability to have Guy and Jerome play off those bumps and have the ball in Clark's hand, who also really is a terrific on-ball defender. So now they guard the hell out of the ball at the point. I mean, they just flat out, like, the job that Kihei Clark did on Callum last night was ridiculous. It was ridiculous. I mean, he was up into him, pressured him, distorted him. I mean, it was unbelievable. And DeAndre Hunter is a pro.
Yeah, he's a pro.
He's a pro. He's going to be a first-round draft choice. He's going to play in the league 10 years. He's the new age NBA 4 guy, right? I mean, you know, that's the way I look at him. He's really good. I thought something interesting in that game. You know, Tony Bennett always doubles the post big to big. And I don't know if this is a formula to beat Wisconsin, but he played Hap and said, you know, we're going to play Hap man-to-man. Hap, you're not beating us. We're taking away all that, those dribble kick-out threes. I thought that was really an interesting defensive game plan, different than what they normally do. But it took away, like, if Hap has – I think you said he might be the most unique big in the country. He's just unique. And like, if you take away the pass, can he beat you by himself on the block, pivoting and creating angles and stepping through and, you know, going all Kevin McHale on you? I mean, didn't you think that was interesting they didn't double him?
I did, and he talked about it after the game with us, Tony did. He said, you know, we normally double, but we just didn't want to give up shots. Like, the game before, Dimitri Trice went off, like, just made everything. And right. I think when you know how it's different when you're there watching as opposed to maybe you're watching on TV, you get a little distracted. But when you're there watching, you could see that, like, Wisconsin making shots makes Wisconsin a heck of a lot more confident and better than just Hap making buckets around the rim. Does that make sense to you? Do you know what I mean? They get juice. They get, you know.
And I think get three out of it, too.
Yeah, well, right. And I think they made a conscious effort to double early. You know, first impressions being the most lasting.
Right.
And then I think they're like, wait a second here. We can't give up threes. We're going to change it up. And, you know, away you go.
Yeah, I think what they did last night, I mean, to Maryland, a very good. I think Maryland's really good. I think Maryland has a chance to be really good. The Big Ten is really good. I mean, but Maryland's got pieces. Jalen Smith's going to be good. Bruno Fernando. Now, they went back to Dublin, Fernando, and he pitched it all over the place early. But that dude is a load. And there was a stretch in the middle of that game where both teams were just – they were playing at a high, high level. And Braxton Key helps Virginia a little bit, gives him another athlete in the front court. But I was impressed with Maryland. How about what Villanova did last week, though? Is that a head-scratcher?
Villanova. No, yes and no. I think everybody needs a little humility. I do. And I said this last night on a broadcast that – my first practice at Indiana was after 1981 national championship, and I thought we were practicing well, and Knight stops it and just goes off and tells everybody, you know, that was there the previous year, Randy Whitman, Ted Kitchell, these guys, like, hey, you forgot how hard you had to work in October to get to March. And that's always stuck with me, and I've always paid attention to that. And, you know, Jay Wright, I think he felt or feels that they needed a little humility. I think they needed a little, you know, because they got whomped by Michigan opening a new building or whatever, you know, they were doing there. And didn't get any better after that. So now they are better. So at the end of the day, let's be honest, they're going to be okay, but they need a little humility, Seth.
I think they need humility. They also need a couple of dudes. I mean, like that. Yeah, I mean, like 61 points, 21 rebounds, 343s. They're going to be good. If they have time to prepare, they're really good because they kind of mess around with their defense. But they've got warts. Pascal and Booth have got to be really good. Now, I like this kid, Sadiq Bey. I think he has a chance to be really good.
Yeah.
He's kind of skilled. And they need some guys like Roundtree. I think Crosby Roundtree played great in that tournament. He can continue to play well. Bey develops. Because the Big East is a little bit down. St. John's looks good, but they haven't played anyone.
I don't buy them. You buy them?
No.
Buy or sell St. John's.
I'm selling. I mean, I know the guards are good and Pons, shots, but their best win's VCU, who's really well coached. But I mean, you know, I said that they were a poor man's Virginia Tech the way they play. And then Virginia Tech lost to Penn State. People goes, well, you know, obviously, yeah, that's really good, you know, Virginia, because I don't think that St. John's at the end of games, like they made shots against VCU, they took bad shots. They just made tough shots. I mean,
they did. They can too.
Yeah, they can make. I mean, Shamar Ponce can make tough shots. You know, Heron's good. I mean, Heron's. I think the funniest thing is, you know, like, why does one transfer get eligible and another one doesn't? That's.
I don't get that.
I don't get it. But that's another story. All right. So we were Villanova bounce back, impressive. Florida State talent length. I mean, like, they don't even have Phil Kofor yet. Florida State is good. I mean, really good. And they had a great win against Purdue last night where they came back at home, dominated the game. Don't know if they shoot it game in and game out that well. Don't know at times if there is purposeful. But I'll tell you what, they got a lot of guys that can impact the game. I mean, the play Forrest made at the end of the game. Mann made plays. Kamigali made plays. I mean, like, Florida State is a top five team in the ACC.
You know what makes them, and they did it, and well, they didn't do it in the second half. Savoy making shots. Savoy can really shoot.
Someone's got to make shots.
Yeah, and you know what? Florida State, to me, has always been, I don't know the right way to, really well coached, really tough defensively with real guys. And then, let's be honest, Seth, I mean, you got to make shots in this world, and Savoy gives them a different guy, I think. And last second half yesterday when they were up 12 at half against Purdue, he didn't make anything, and you know, they struggled, and Purdue kind of gave it away at the end. But we say Purdue gives it away, right? But teams do that against Florida State. Florida State turns it up on you, and next thing you know, whap, 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 you know, you got a problem. And I look, I'm a big Leonard Hamilton fan. I think he's like, what's that, Benjamin Buttons? He keeps getting younger. Like, he never ages.
Oh, it's ridiculous. It's
almost unbelievable.
I feel bad about myself when I watch.
Yes! Like, I remember him as an assistant at Kentucky when I was playing at Indiana 772 years ago, and he looks the same. Like, how do you do that? What are you doing?
It's the crazy. Every time, I mean, like, dude is ageless. I mean, he's ageless. And, like, he doesn't sleep either. Like the dude, like, he
really?
When you were recruiting against Leonard Hamilton, you know, he was most dangerous when you didn't see him. He was working. Like, if you didn't see Leonard, when I was in Florida, we recruited a Florida kid. If I didn't see Leonard, I just turned my staff and say, it's over. We're done. Most dangerous. You're speaking of giving the game away, and you know, Michigan State, Louisville. I really was impressed with Louisville. I was impressed with, obviously, McMahon made shots and Nwora made that big three. But, you know, if I'm Tom Izzo and my junior, I have to, 1A, jump his rear end to get him going, and Josh Langford. Number two, at the end of the game, we rebound the basketball. All you've got to do is take two or three hard dribbles, jump stop, chin it, pivot, and they're fouling you. And you throw that pass. That's why after games now, I can eat and taste the food. And Tom Izzo, I'm sure, did not eat after that game.
All right, let me go this route with you, okay? Because you and Iz are good friends, really good friends. Yeah. Iz and I are more acquaintances, but we're back.
But you know what? I feel like Henry Kissinger.
Yes.
I feel like we brought.
We did. We're all good. We're all good, okay? But let me ask you this question from Izzo's perspective, because I got a little tired of it. He rightfully so was jumping Josh Langford's ass. I mean, he was jumping him. And Langford wasn't having it. And I know Tom allows that. I know that's part of the thing.
I
get it. But here's my thing. The next day, because it really didn't change for Langford. He went and made a few shots, but he had turnover, you know, big turnover and all that stuff. At some point, though, after, like yesterday, the day after the game, don't you just got to tell a guy, look, when I'm on, you just got to shut the hell up and do what I say. Like, you know, Winston kept coming back. Winston kept reaching. And Izzo kept, you know, why are you reaching? And then he did it three times. And it was the first time, Seth, and I've done a ton of their games. It's the first time that I said, oh, man, I get it. This is part of the deal. But shut up and just listen to the coach this time. You know what I mean? I don't know.
Yeah, he has a unique relationship because he spends so much time with those guys. Almost, it's incredible. I mean, the number of meetings and time and personal time, and, you know, and everyone looks at him and they look at those type of relationships. And, you know, I know we're doing all this thing on Coach Knight now, which makes me sick because, I mean, I agree with you 100%. This is me speaking that, like, we hired Coach Knight. He worked for us. This is like an old story that we're just bringing back to life. You know, it's not like there's anything new coming out of the story. We all, you know, what happened happened. You lived it. Moving on. But, you know, Tom's going to coach his guys hard. Tom spends a ton of time because and that's why he can coach his guys hard. And I think that's part of the give and take, although he does have great buy-in because you see how they play. But, like, if those three juniors don't play well, they're not good. If they throw the ball away, they're not good. And, you know, I wasn't there, so I couldn't see it firsthand, you know, exactly what was going on. But they can't start games with 12 turnovers in the first half, I mean, and expect to be a good team. And on the other hand, I thought that Chris Mack's team was really good. I thought that pack line was good. I thought that they've got some good pieces. Williams is interesting. Noir is interesting. McMahon is obviously makes shots. Darius Perry can guard some. I like Sutton. I think that Louisville's a pretty good team. What do you think?
I think they are going to be really good. I mean, here's what I liked about them, Seth. They had a toughness to them that, you know, in your first year, you just get it that you want. I mean, look, we all can put it in an offense. We all can put it out of bounds plays, press break. We all can put in, okay, we're going to play a zone. But the real core, the real guts of the whole thing is your thought, your what's the right word? Your culture, your want
to. You impose
to.
Your personality and toughness on your team.
Yeah, and that's what I saw, because there were times in that game that they could have folded. In fact, you know, we mentioned a turnover late with Langford. You know, they had a chance to go ice the game, and they just turned up the screws and play harder. And you know what was interesting, Seth? And this is, again, where I go back to Langford. Langford throws the ball away, has a bad game, throws the ball away. He's arguing with the coach half the time. And then he doesn't know, or he forgets, or what, I don't know, that even when you're supposed to miss a free throw, you're supposed to hit the rim. It's like when you're not there, and he wasn't there to start the game at all, it's really hard to get there. And I thought Louisville was locked in at every position. Dickie V's guy, McMahon, was fantastic. And you know what? The most impressive thing was how tough the Chris Max team was. That was really good. Really good.
I agree. Now, I'll tell you a team that wasn't tough in the ACC Big Ten Challenge. Minnesota was shocking.
That's unbelievable.
Now, BC, I'll tell you, Jimmy Christian can really coach.
He can, but this is a team that lost to IUPUI a week ago at home, and inexcusable to me. And I know a road game is tough. Okay, I get it. We all get it.
And at that place, really,
it's not tough.
I won a team from Carolina. I never won a BC.
Why?
It's a weird – well, first of all, it's friends and family only.
That's what I'm saying. Right.
No, you're playing – the ice is down, so it's freezing in there. Your locker room is a hockey locker room that's like just – there's no – you try to do everything to get your team to be locked in, have a sense of urgency. You talk about it. You talk about what you have to do, and it's just – it really is – a difficult play, and it's not fair because Jimmy's got kind of a fun team. The kid, you know, the Tap kid's good. Obviously, the Kai Bowman's good, but Minnesota. I mean, you talk about just not being locked in. Point guard plays are going to be an issue. There's no doubt about it. Now, shot making is an issue. That one freshman can really shoot it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he can really shoot it. But Jordan Murphy made the same foul four times, and I mean. I was shocked because I was expecting Minnesota to be really good. Mia Coffey.
They might be.
And they might be.
Yeah.
But they were really – it was shock. I was shocked, again, on the road, how bad they were in that moment in time. Yet your guy, your favorite coach in college basketball, your guy, the James Dean of college coaching, Jim Boeheim.
It's unbelievable.
He just had his dudes just ready to just roll in to Columbus, Ohio. And with Frank Howard back, they go 11 for 23 from the three-point line. But I think the biggest difference with Frank Howard back is 6'5 at the top of the zone.
Yes.
He really understands the zone, understands angles, understands what he's taken away. It moves in relation to where the ball is and where other people are. I mean, that's the biggest thing. You're replacing a guy at the top who's like, got a PhD in the top of his own.
That is so underrated. I tried to say that yesterday. You know, I had to play zone, and I was a man-to-man guy, but we were hurt. I lost my best three players, 7 of my 10 years. So 7 years, we're scrapping it around trying to figure out how to play a zone. And I learned very quickly that some guys know how to play a zone, some guys don't. And it's not just standing around in a zone. And Frank Howard made all the difference. I swear, Seth, it's like, the difference in Frank Howard and not Frank Howard is to the point where Syracuse's season shouldn't count, except for games that Frank Howard played in, man. I'm telling you, he's that big a difference maker. And it's like I said to Ravi last night, Carl Ravage, it's like having Verlander on the mound. You just feel comfortable behind him, and everybody, you can just tell. And you know what? Tyus Battle was fantastic. They shot the ball in. Ohio State didn't have any answers. And good for Jim Boeheim. I think he's awesome. And
you know your boy Jim Boeheim. Who is there a coach in the country that makes better in-game adjustments?
No.
Than Jim Boeheim.
No.
Like, I have no understanding of just how good a game coach he is.
No. And he did it yesterday, too. I'm telling you, he went and he changed up that zone. He put more pressure on the basketball. He rotated to take the drop and take away the middle, not necessarily giving up threes, but kind of allowing a three. I thought what he did in that game was masterful. They started out awful. You've coached against it, so you understand that. Uh-huh. You can't have a great setup, and then he's going to adjust to it. So you better have 15 great setups. You know what I mean?
We played him in the Garden, the finals of preseason NIT, and we were just slinging it. We were rolling. I mean, we were absolutely rolling. And then all of a sudden, he made one little adjustment. We were running different guys in the middle, and as soon as that thing capped in the middle, instead of laying that guy back, all of a sudden that big came out our guy, and they just fanned and matched up like crazy, and boom, it was all over.
Yeah.
Just the little subtle things that he does. Interesting. I'm going to go two upsets, and then we'll get some picks. But two upsets, Penn State, Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech only had four guys score. Not good.
A little humility for Virginia Tech. You think Virginia Tech maybe was it's not the easiest thing handling success, my brother. It just isn't. You know this. I don't know.
I love Justin Robinson. Love
yeah.
Him. Ahmad Hill didn't make a shot the whole game. He was 0-for. You made as many field goals as he did. I just think eventually not having Clark, who right now is suspended, who knows, maybe all of a sudden he'll get unsuspended. They have no depth up front. They're phenomenal in terms of how they spread the court. I thought Penn State was good. I thought the two freshman guards were really good. Bolton's really good. The kid Moore had scored averaging 2 points a game. I think he had 18 in the game. I mean, Jones, I should say. Myron Jones had 18 in the game. I thought they were pretty good. I really did. I thought Penn State was pretty good. That was an interesting one. And then, you know, I think that the other one, Nebraska is really good.
Yeah, they are.
Second weekend good.
Yeah, they are. Yeah. Assuming they stay healthy. You know what else in Nebraska people aren't, you know, and this comes into play, as you well know, place is sold out for the entire season, Seth.
Place How good is that?
You know, look, Michigan. Michigan, if John Beilein had, or let me back up. If Jim Harbaugh had the success of John Beilein, they'd be putting a statue to Harbaugh up. John Beilein just goes about his business, man, and just great. Sometimes we don't understand what we have, and I'm glad that Nebraska understood what they have in Tim Miles and let him continue on there because they got it sold out. They've got a really good team. And unless something ridiculous happens, I expect them to continue to have a really good team.
You know, you made a great point because, like, Nebraska sold out. Did you see the crowds at BC and Miami?
Right. Michigan, no crowd. Ohio State, eh. I mean, Michigan had a good crowd for North Carolina.
Michigan looked pretty
good. Yeah,
I'm
sorry. You're right.
You don't have a crowd for Carolina. You don't know.
Right. You're right. You're right. No, they had a good crowd.
But, that's the one thing that was a little bit surprising to me, but I'll tell you what, the thing is, which is real, you know, football can give you that every game counts. No one had a greater first 3 weeks of the season, any sport, than we've just had. I mean, like, we've had teams emerge. Nevada, let me tell you something, those dudes are really good. I mean, like, the starting lineup for Nevada was entering college. When the freshmen at Duke were in eighth and ninth grade.
How about that?
The average age is 23 and a half, the starting lineup at Nevada. Every single guy is a fifth-year guy and a couple of prep school guys. How crazy is that?
I like it. I like this. You're giving good nuggets, Seth. Like the nugget about Williamson taking 75 shots and J.R. Barrett or whatever the hell is R.J. Barrett. You know,
he's missed more.
R.J.
Barrett's missed more shots than Zion Williamson has taken. You know what that's from? Having no life. When you have no life, you find out these nuggets.
Yeah.
You sit in your office, you pontificate, talk to yourself.
And your dog.
Hang out. Jake's right here. Don't worry about it. Jake's taking notes.
I'd like to welcome in Kansas head coach Bill Self. Coach Self, congratulations on your success in New York. I have to admit, NIT preseason, postseason, playing it in Barclays as opposed to the Garden, a little different?
I've only been in the preseason NIT two other times. in the Garden. And, you know, this is Barclays is a great arena and everything, but I still think the Garden has a totally different feel. And they were able to curtain it off at Barclays, which made it, which was good because we, I think we only had about 8,000 people at the game. So it felt very intimate and everything. And it was first class without question. Competition was great, but it seems like to me, there's just something about walking in the Garden. That's a little bit different than everywhere else.
Yeah. I know growing up as a New Yorker, I mean, I'm so damn old now. I remember going to the old Garden with my dad when I was a little kid, and then I remember when the new Garden was being built, and I was actually at the game Willis Reed came out through that tunnel.
Well, you are dating yourself.
And you were the last seat in the garden.
And you were 20 years old when you were there, probably.
No, 13 years old, crazy. But your team, this is a different team for you. Like, when I start thinking about your teams, I think about, you know, Frank Mason with the ball in his hands and Devontae Graham with the ball in his hands. And how different is it for you, who've had so much success with different types of teams, having these young guards? How has that changed you in terms of how your approach, considering you had that luxury of those veteran guys for so long?
I tell you what, one thing that you do is you take for granted what you had until you don't have it anymore. and you know, with Frank and Devontae, I mean, those were two first-team All-Americans that were in your program for, you know, a total of 8 years. And you sub in talented kids, maybe more talented than when they got here. But it's their first year. And it is new. It is different. I probably expect too much. I think that's okay to expect a lot because be demanding because we're expecting for us to do what we want to do. These young ones have to deliver, and they're being thrown in the fire. But it is a little different because you have to kind of step back and say, well, they've never done this, and this is the first time they've ever heard that, and those sorts of things. But they've done a good job. Devon has been really, really good and consistent. Q has had his moments where he's been the best player in the game, and then, you know, he's been a little bit inconsistent and not quite as aggressive as what I think he needs to be. But they're both going to be really good players.
You know, I had a chance to spend some time with Q when his group went to Italy a couple summers ago. How hard is it for a guy that's that talented, big, strong, physical, mature, but he actually puts pressure on himself? Is that something that you have to manage or have to help him get through, just enjoying that process and enjoying where he's at and what he's doing?
You know what? I think that's well put. I talked with him for quite a while yesterday, and we've had some talks. And he's right now a little bit tied up because his mind is paralyzing his body and keeping him from reacting the way he wants to do it because he's got too much stuff on his brain. I need to be here. I need to do this. I got it. And I said, no, just go play. Just go play. Be aggressive. You know, play the game the way you know how to play it. And these are the parameters we're putting you in. Just try to stay within the line, so to speak. And I think he'll be good with that. He's obviously not the first one that you or I have coached like that. And you know, he's coming in with quite a few expectations. And he's probably as complete a guard as we've recruited. When you stop and think about size, shot, mid-range, getting through the hole, vision. You know, he's an explosive athlete. He's got a lot of things going for him, but right now he's just kind of playing not to screw up. And when you play that way, you always are very indecisive. And so we got to get him where he's just thinking aggressive all the time and all his thoughts.
You know, it's funny because everyone looks at freshmen and talented freshmen and highly rated freshmen, and they think that the transition's just boom, it's just easy. But there's a process, and you know, college basketball is harder than it looks on TV for a lot of these kids. And I think that's a transition part, but also sometimes they just got to unplug, and you got to plug them back in, like exactly what you're doing. Say, like, just go and play ball. I mean, you've played ball your whole life. You got this body. You can guard. You can make shots. Just play on instinct, which is hard to get those guys to do at times, right?
Do you remember a kid we had named Travis Relaford?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, now Travis didn't play at all as a freshman and sophomore. He ends up being a two-year starter. Has a great career for us, great career. And he was a top 50 type player when he came in, you know, but even top 50 type guys think that they should be playing all the minutes as a freshman, or top 100 type guys. And so he labored early in his career, best kid ever. And I was in a recruit's home when Travis was a senior, and I said, how good do you think Relaford is? And the recruit said, oh, geez, coach, he's all right. You know, just shoots it okay. He's just all right. I told the recruit right there, I said, just so you know, if you ever played in a game against Travis Relaford, you would score 0 points. Zero. You wouldn't scratch. And this kid, we got him, and this kid came here, and it was a pickup game, and Travis was in town. And I told Travis, hey, today, just for the heck of it, just don't let him catch it. The kid didn't score a basket the whole day. And I asked him afterwards, now do you understand? It is harder than what kids think. You're exactly right. And I mean, to me, that was a prime example. And the thing about it is, you see so many kids that are having unbelievable success right now as freshmen. And you know, one of them is our kid, Dotson. I mean, he's having unbelievable success. You see the kids at Duke, and you see kids all across America that are doing it. But there's reasons why, you know, obviously their talent is exceptional, but they're also in a situation that makes it easier for them to have success, in at least early in their career, because of opportunity, because of the way that things are structured that's best for the team. It happens to fall right. And you know as well as I do, sometimes with freshmen, they're coming in, and if they're the fourth option on offense, they still feel like they should be the first option. And the way they can really help the team are ways that they've never been asked to help a team before. You know, if you could just really be our lockdown defender, if our leading scorer doesn't have to guard the other team's best player, he'll be fresher at the end of the game to be our leading scorer. And it's hard for kids to grasp that and understand that, but that's also what makes it fun, trying to put the pieces together.
Yeah, and if they get to the next level, which they all want to get to, 90% of them are going to be role players anyway. Because there's only a couple of dudes up there, and the rest of the guys have a role that they're really good at, and they excel at, and they help their teams win at any level. But, I mean, the number of guys...
90%, 99%, you know, or 98%. That's the thing. I mean, I tell the kids all the time, I'm sure you do too, no, your role at the next level, hopefully that you get that role, would be to make sure that the best players are playing better. How do you make them look good? I mean, I remember Thomas Robinson, who was an unbelievable player for us, unbelievable. And I was talking to his NBA head coach, and he said, you know something, we're not going to run one play for Thomas. Thomas has to score off other people's plays. Yep. And you know, that's hard for a guy that goes from being a consensus first-team All-American. But that's the way it is, and sometimes it's hard to get kids to see that when they're real young.
Now, one guy that's getting it pretty well is Dedrick Lawson. I watch him play. You know, he's not 6'8 or so, maybe 6'7, and not overly explosive. You can't put your finger on any one thing, except he can pass the crap out of the ball. The ball finds him off a backboard. He makes other guys better. He's almost like, to me, as I watch you guys, am I wrong? Is he almost like a security blanket for your team?
Yeah, there's no question. To me, people ask me who he reminds me of, and this may be a bad example, but it's kind of like a Boris Diaw. You know, just a jack of all trades. He's not the most explosive athlete, but sometimes I think people look at athleticism strictly as how high you can jump or how fast you can run, as opposed to the quick twitch or the second jump or how fast or how strong his hands are and things like that. And he rates out high overall as an athlete, but just not the explosive, fast, quick twitch guy that a lot of people relate to. But when you talk about being able to shot fake or jab or get a guy leaning one way and then counter his lean, I think he's about as good as I've seen at the collegiate level, at least that I've worked with. So he's a really good player, and he's been terrific, and then he's had some off games for us. But I think over the course of the season, as he gets more and more comfortable, I he could be a guy that averages 18 and 10, and certainly we need him to do that.
I'll tell you, when you run that big-to-big ball screen at the foul line and he throws that pass to Doak, that's a hard pass to throw, and he makes it look easy.
Yeah, he's a good passer. I built him up quite a bit as a passer, and And there's been some days he's made me look smart, and some days maybe he didn't make me look so smart.
He pitches it to the wrong team a little bit too much, but he tries.
Yeah. No, he's a talented passer.
How about Doak? You know, I mean, obviously his progress has been fun to watch. I mean, you know, he looks like he's in phenomenal shape. I mean, he runs the court so well. How hard is it? You know, you're going back to a little bit more of the high low stuff instead of the four out stuff, and he pushes his man up the lane and catches stuff and finishes and all that. But how hard is it to? You had a lot of success the last 3 years spreading it out. Now you're going back to trying to isolate him, get him touches early. And then the decision at the end of the game, so I mean, how long do we stay with him in a two-point game with the free throw shooting situation? But how different is it of saying, you know, we're going to play through this big dude now?
Well, I think, you know, I told the team yesterday, we worked out yesterday a couple of times, and I told the team, I said, when Doak's in the game, you know, the offense is going through Doak. I mean, but Doak, what you got to understand is now if the offense goes from you, you need to become a better passer. You need to fan it more. He's going through a phase where he's catching it and holding it, feeling like he has to try to score when they've got him pushed into spots that maybe he's not the most comfortable with. So he needs to be able to fan and repost or fan and run into one. And we'll be much better offensively, and he'll be more efficient offensively. But you're exactly right. I'm a little bit screwed up now because we're not running very fluid offense, and I think it's my fault because I want to spread the floor. I want to play similar to what we played in the past. And even though we don't probably have the shooters when you talk about, you know, the volume of the number of threes that we'll make, we've had pretty efficient shooting so far. I mean, Legerald's been off the charts good, and Q's shooting 45 and Devon shooting 50 from three. So we've had pretty decent shooting, just limited attempts. And so I think we can spread it, but it's hard to spread it playing two bigs. And so I got to figure out a way, how do we spread it playing two bigs? How do we play small playing big? And that's something that we're trying to figure out right now, because he is so much better when he's got space to operate.
Oh, no doubt about it. Legerald, you've had good players have runs, but he had a run a couple of weeks ago. That was every time he shot it, you thought it was going in.
Yeah.
Here's a kid who was kind of vacillating, come back, not come back. You know, obviously he made the right decision. When a guy comes back like that for you, I mean, he's got to be all in. He's got to understand the good of the group and what you guys are trying to do. Yeah, is that an interesting dynamic? Just, you know, once he decided to come back, kind of the parameters of, hey, you know, you're a leader of this team, but you got to be buying into the group.
Well, I think it's. I've learned a lot through this, but Legerald, first of all, he's been terrific. His energy, his talking, his leadership is by far the best it's been. But he can also see the light at the end of the tunnel too. He's a senior, and you know, there's no safety net. You know, this is it, and he's been really, really good in intangible ways, which to me, as you know, you can be a really good player and you lack intangibles, you're just okay. You can be a really good player with tangibles and you can be, or intangibles, and you can be terrific. And he's got that right now. Hopefully he can continue that. But the fact that he's the only senior at first was kind of a concern. And now it's like, it's the best thing that's ever happened to us, because he has been a great leader, role model, and guys are following his lead. And so teams is only as good as your seniors, they say. Well, if you got crappy seniors, your team's not going to be very good then. Well, we happen to have a terrific senior. So that's been really good for us.
Schedule, you got Nova left, you got Arizona stuff left, you got Wofford, who just came off a big win against South Carolina. What's your guys' schedule coming up? When's finals? And then are you going to give them a chance to have some time off? How do you manage that time before your league, which is so competitive because it's a true round robin? How do you guys manage like the next few weeks, which is a hard time for teams and a hard time for young teams, because when everyone leaves campus, your guys a lot of times get stuck there. How do you deal with it?
Well, we'll obviously play Stanford Saturday, and then we have Wofford on Tuesday, which you just mentioned. You know, they just beat South Carolina. They're good, and they can really, really shoot. And so we'll have Wofford Tuesday, And then we play New Mexico State Saturday in Kansas City, and then it's finals week. And so we'll be limited practice, but we'll be able to practice most days during finals week around their schedule. And then we play Nova on that Saturday, the 15th, and then I believe we play the 18th, and then finish up at Arizona State right before Christmas. And so, you know, we let the kids go for Christmas for, I think they all get at least 3, maybe 4 days at home. I can't remember exactly what it is, and report back, and then one game before New Year's, and then the league starts. And so, you know, some leagues have already started playing games, if I'm not mistaken, or real close to starting. And I'm glad that we were able to put ours off until after the new year. But yeah, it's going to get hot and heavy. And those are, you know, people talk about dog days for freshmen in February and stuff like that. And that's true. But for an entire team, the dog days are in January when you're practicing twice a day and you don't have a school in session with no classmates. That can get pretty old for the kids.
Yeah, it's really hard. I always thought that was the hardest time for our freshmen. I mean, our freshmen, you know, first time really extended period, there's no one around. You're in a college town like when I was in Blacksburg. I mean, you're trying to keep them occupied, practice, not over-practice them. I just always thought that was a kind of a delicate time. You know, now leagues like the Big Ten opens up league play this weekend. I mean, they've got games.
Right.
And you guys play 18 league games. You know, most leagues now, they're trying to basically eliminate mid-majors, so everyone's going to 20 league games because
– right.
You know, TV wants more of those games anyway. But, well, Bill, I really appreciate it. Your team is fun to watch. You might not be happy with your offense now in terms of figuring out your spacing, but the pace of what you guys do with such a young backcourt has been fun to watch. And have a great holiday. Appreciate your time and good luck the rest of the season. We'll see you probably. I'm sure we'll be seeing you shortly.
I hope so. I miss you.
I hear you, brother. Be good, man. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Hey, Dan.
Yo.
Big Ten opening up early.
Yes.
Which, first week of December. I don't know if you like, don't like, got to pay the bills, 20 games in the league. What do you think?
Who I like?
No, I mean, like, you like starting league this early?
I like it for me. I don't, you know, I like it if I win. Like, you know, we did that in the MAC, and I remember we always won this game, and you always felt good, even if when you got blown out somewhere else, you're like, oh, man, at least we're 1-0 in the league. So I like it for us. I like it for college basketball. You know, I'm going to be at Purdue at Michigan. That's going to be a monster game. I love that game for college basketball on a big-time football Saturday. So, yeah, I don't have any problem with it. I don't have to coach it. I don't, you know, but – look, you work with guys in the summer, you work with them in the fall, you work with them in the spring. It's not like practice starts October 15th and you're not ready for conference play. Everybody's ready for everything. So, yeah, let's go. Let's play some games.
All right, so let's play some games. Wisconsin, Iowa. Iowa did not look great the other day. No. I was a little surprised against Pitt, but I still, you know, Luka Garza I like. I like Weiskamp as a freshman. Obviously, I like Tyler Cook. Wisconsin came back against an NC State team, by the way. It's playing really well.
Really well. Got some dudes, too.
Who do you like in the Iowa Wisconsin?
I am going to take Iowa on at home. Yeah, I think that Wisconsin is good. I do. But I'm going to do this, Seth. I'm going to, for the first time in a long time, do what you did last year and get on the Iowa train.
Oh, you're on the Iowa train.
I am until further notice, and that notice will come if they lose, and I will be off the train. But I'm going to be on the Iowa train against a good, not great, but a good Wisconsin team. You?
Yeah, how about your boy Davidson taking 5 charges? That was crazy.
That's awesome. Well, you know what? You play a drinking game, and every time he hits the deck, you'd be hammered in about 5 minutes. Dude can hit the deck, and he's a great kid. I had a fantastic conversation with him at in the Bahamas. I want my daughter or my stepdaughter to marry him.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right. Word out to Brad Davidson. Yeah.
Yep.
Some dockages potential in the future.
Yep.
I'm going to stay with Iowa right now. I do like Wisconsin. I think that Kobe King's got to do more. Isn't that guy good?
He's really good. He can make buckets, but he is undersized to do anything else other than pull up and shoot. He is not Carson Edwards, but he can make buckets, and he's got to make buckets. And Aleem Ford has to get healthy. He's just about there.
All right. Well, I'm still going with the Fighting Franny McCaffreys. They just got a lot of – you look at their team and break their team down, they just got a lot of good players.
Yeah, they do.
They don't have bad players. All right, Gonzaga at Creighton. Creighton, a tough place to play. Gonzaga, number one. Geno Crandall out now with for 6 weeks, which will hurt him because I think that having a guy like Crandall backing up Perkins keeps Perkins honest. That's just me as an old, you know, miserable coach that thinks you got to have a little pressure behind a guy to keep him right. But Gonzaga is just so talented. Who you got?
That's a good game. I mean, it's a solid game, but I'm taking Gonzaga. I wasn't impressed when I saw Gonzaga play, or excuse me, Creighton play against Ohio State. I thought they were fine, but I mean, they lost too many guys over the last couple of years, including a big kid, Patton, who would probably be a junior right now. I until further notice, I wouldn't be surprised other than where they play at Carolina, maybe Gonzaga. Gonzaga's going to roll here.
Yeah, and that, Carolina's going to be fine. And, you know, I know Roy talked about he's the worst coach in America. He did a bad job.
Sure, sure.
He's got a young point. Kobe White's not a point guard right now. He doesn't get anyone else involved. He just plays. He plays at 10 miles an hour faster than everyone else on their team. And when you do that, I think that's a problem. That's just a little commentary in between.
Yeah, and the one dad wants to fight everybody, so you can't have that. Mr. Little wants to fight.
Before we have one other, Nevada, USC. I think Nevada could actually go undefeated. How's that one for you?
I think Nevada has a real shot to go undefeated. I think USC is typical USC, athletic, all this. And I think a guy named Boatwright's been there since I was in college. But
you're not rowing the boat.
That guy. Don't get me started on row the boat guy either. Anyway, I digress. Look, until further notice, Nevada undefeated. And Gonzaga undefeated, USC still being USC, win 20 games, some kind of scandal, and lose the tournament.
All right, you can't pick Purdue-Michigan. Give me two or three things on Purdue-Michigan.
Well, I think this. I think who's going to score for Purdue? I mean, Carson Edwards going to go for 50? I don't know because, hey, I'm telling you, this Yelich assistant coach for Michigan has got Michigan playing defense, and Xavier Simpson right now.
Monster.
Yeah, I don't – like, there's a lot of guys with a lot more skill, but I'm not sure there's anybody I want leading my team, brother. I'm not.
I agree with you. That dude is a monster. I'll tell you what, when you guard the point and you have a guy like Charles Matthews who can take away a guard wing, and Teske who just kind of bounces around and guards ball screens and knocks people out, and you got Iggy. Let's get Iggy with it. Who, like, that dude is the perfect mix for a John Beilein team because he's got enough blank in him.
Yep.
That time he's going to become a guy people don't like to play against. He's going to become annoying. He's the Chase Winovich. Is that how you pronounce his name?
It is.
Before Ohio State game, that is. The Chase Winovich before the Ohio State
game. The Chase Winovich after Ohio State game hasn't been seen, but go ahead.
No revenge tours here. I can't go Michigan at home. I said it this past weekend. I mean, if Carson Edwards is Batman, and I know Ryan Klein scored some buckets, they still don't have a Robin. They just don't. And I think it's just going to be too hard in the big picture for them. I think that does it. I'd like to thank Coach Self for spending a little time with me talking about Kansas basketball, the state of college basketball, his season moving forward. And, you know, by the way, you know, this is the world's greatest podcast.
Yeah,
please subscribe to the podcast, wherever you subscribe to your podcast. And make sure you rate us. And I'm sure it'll be fantastic because the world's greatest podcast, you can't be the world's greatest podcast without having a great rating in Apple Podcasts. And Lee Squared, I will be speaking to you from the studio as usual. Hopefully we'll have Mixed Minus and we'll have a conversation.
All right, brother.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcasts.